Seed on the hill field beyond the farm. so his fancy the next afternoon. Peter had asked him, of course, for Matthew Cuthbert had never been known to volunteer information about anything in his whole life. And yet, here was Matthew Cuthbert at 3:30 on the afternoon of a busy day, placidly driving over the hollow and up the hill. Moreover, he wore a white collar and his best suit of clothes, which was plain proof that he was going out of Avonlea. And he had the buggy and the sorrel mare, which betokened that he was going a considerable distance. Now, where was Matthew Cuthbert going, and why was he going there? Had it been any other man in Avonlea, Mrs. Rachel deftly putting this and that together might have given a pretty good guess as to both questions. But Matthew so rarely went from home that it must be something pressing and unusual which was taking him. He was the shyest man alive and hated to go among strangers or to any place where he might have to talk. Matthew dressed up with a white collar and driving in a buggy was something that didn't happen often. Mrs. Rachel, ponder as she might, could make nothing of it, and her afternoon's enjoyment was spoiled. "I'll just step over to Green Gables after tea and find out from Marilla where he's gone and why," the worthy woman finally concluded. "He doesn't generally go to town this time of year, and he never visits. If he ran out of currency, he wouldn't dress up and take the buggy to go for more. He wasn't driving fast enough to be going for a doctor. Yet something must have happened since last night to start him off. I'm plain puzzled, that's what. And I won't know a minute's peace of mind or conscience until I know what has taken Matthew Cuthbert out of Avonlea today." Accordingly, after tea, Mrs. Rachel set out. She had not far to go. The big rambling orchard-embowered house where the Cuthberts lived was a scant quarter of a mile up the road from Lynde's Hollow. To be sure, the long lane made it a good deal further. Matthew Cuthbert's father, as shy and silent as his son after him, had got as far away as he possibly could from his fellow men without actually retreating into the woods when he founded his homestead. Green Gables was built at the furthest edge of his cleared land, and there it was to this day, barely visible from the main road along which all the other Avonlea houses were so sociably situated. Mrs. Rachel Lynde did not call living in such a place living at all.
"It's just
Cinderella are both a little odd, living away back here by themselves. Trees aren't much company. Though, dear knows, if they were, there'd be enough of them. I'd rather look at people. To be sure, they seem contented enough. But then, I suppose they're used to it. If I can get used to anything, even to being hanged, as the Irishman said. With this, Mrs. Rachel stepped out of the lane into the backyard of Green Gables. Very clean and neat and precise was that yard. Set about on one side with great patriarchal willows and the other with prim Lombardies. Not a stray stick nor stone was to be seen. Rachel would have seen it if there had been. Privately, she was of the opinion that Marilla Cuthbert swept that yard over as often as she swept her house. One could have eaten a meal off this ground without overbrimming the proverbial tank of dirt. Mrs. Rachel rapped smartly at the kitchen door and stepped in when bidden to do so. The kitchen at Green Gables was a cheerful apartment, or would have been cheerful if it had not been so painfully clean as to give it something of the appearance of an unused parlor. Its windows looked east and west. Through the west one, looking out on the backyard, came a flood of mellow June sunlight. But the east one, whence you got a glimpse of the blooming white cherry trees in the left orchard and nodding slender birches down in the hollow by the brook, was greened over by a tangle of vines. Here sat Marilla Cuthbert, when she sat at all, always slightly distrustful of sunshine, which seemed to her too dancing and irresponsible a thing for a world which was meant to be taken seriously. And here she sat now, knitting, and the table behind her laid for supper. Mrs. Rachel, before she had fairly closed the door, had taken a mental note of everything that was on that table. There were three plates laid, so that Marilla must be expecting someone home with Matthew to tea. But the dishes were everyday and you don't know a single thing about him, nor what his disposition is like, nor what sort of parents he has, nor how he's likely to turn out. Why, it was only last week I read in the paper how a man and his wife out west of the island took a boy out of an orphan asylum and set fire to the house's nest. That was on purpose, Marilla. And nearly burnt them to a crisp in their beds. And I know another case where an adopted boy used to suck the eggs. They couldn't break him of it. If you had asked my advice in the matter, which you didn't do, Marilla, I'd have said for mercy's sake not to think of such a thing, that's what. This chap's comforting seemed neither to offend nor to alarm Marilla. She knitted on steadily. I don't deny there's something in what you say, Richard. I have some qualms myself. But Matthew's a terrible step on it. I could see that, so I gave in. It's so seldom Matthew sets his mind on anything that when he does, I always feel it's my duty to give in. And as for the risk, there's risk in pretty near everything a body does in this world. There's risk in people having children of their own if it comes to that. They don't always turn out well. And then Nova Scotia is right close to the island. It isn't as if he was getting into England or the States. He can't be much different from ourselves. Well, I hope it will turn out all right, said Mrs. Rachel in a tone that plainly indicated her faint doubts. Only don't say I didn't warn you if he burns Green Gables down or puts strychnine in the well. I've heard of a case over in New Brunswick where an orphan asylum child did that, and the whole family died in painful agonies. Only it was a girl in that instance. Well, we're not getting a girl, said Marilla, as if poisoning wells were a purely feminine accomplishment, and not to be dreaded in the case of a boy. I'd never dream of taking a girl to bring up. I wonder if Mrs. Alexander spent it for doing it. But there, she wouldn't shrink from adopting a whole orphan asylum if she took it into her head. Mrs. Rachel wouldn't have left to stay until Matthew came home with his imported orphan, but reflecting that it would be a good 2 hours at least before his arrival, she concluded to go up the road to Robert Bell's and tell the news. It would certainly make a sensation, second to none, and Mrs. Rachel dearly loved to make a sensation. So she took herself away, somewhat to Marilla's relief, but the latter felt her doubts and fears reviving under the influence of Mrs. Rachel's pessimism. Well, of all things that ever were ugly, ugly, ejaculated Mrs. Rachel when she was safely out in the lane, it really does seem about